Yeah, we will be staying close as far as being in touch with you while you're there at the conference.
Yes, absolutely. And you've got my cell phone number. I'll be happy to give you nightly updates for sure.
Yeah, right. Definitely, we're going to cover that.
Yeah.
You know, there's something happening in Rome right now that you've probably heard about.
Yeah,
with the Pope and the Catholic.
Oh, I guess I have heard about that, yes.
Yeah, but the big event in Rome happens in October.
Well, it sure does for me. and
Tell our listeners about that.
I'm honored to. Every couple of years, somewhere in the world, there is a scientific conference around the discoveries of the great scientist, Dr. Wilhelm Reich, whose reputation was in part destroyed greatly because he had the courage in the 1950s to openly discuss and publish around with all of the right bells and whistles and scientific facts and witnesses his observations of and conclusions about the UFO phenomena. I first became aware of his work when I was still a teenager, and not UFO related, but his other scientific discoveries, and he is for me a true hero of humanity whose work has been tremendously distorted and misunderstood. And over the decades, I've made it my business to interview, spend time with, visit the locations, and research everything possible about his UFO-related work. So 2 years ago, for example, I was asked to speak at a conference like this in Greece a few years before that, one in Oregon, sometime before that, one in Nice, France. And in October, I'll be traveling to Rome to present three papers on Reich and UFOs at a conference on the scientific discoveries of Dr. Reich. And I'm not only really looking forward to it as a presenter, researcher, and writer, but as somebody who is something of a world traveler and who began their life in the arts and taught painting in New York for years, I've never visited this great city. And so, like many peer review scientific conferences, there is no fee attached, and I'm not getting paid for my work. However, I am going to get put up for 5 or 6 days after the conference with a friend of the conference, and I'm going to get to be introduced to the City of Light, and I am so excited about it.
I can see Peter standing by the fountains singing three coins in a fountain. Well, maybe not.
Who knows?
tell me about this guy, Ryan Sprague.
Yeah, Ryan. Ryan Sprague is an up-and-coming New York actor who has worked in the theater and on the stage, but he has a degree in playwriting. And he's become a friend of mine over the years. He's a young guy, but he's very gifted. He also has a foot in another world. He is a very good UFO investigative writer, and he's had a number of articles published with Open Minds magazine, arguably the dominant publication of its kind in the United States right now.
And did I understand you that he has a stage play about Rendlesham?
Well, what's going on right now is last year he contacted me. We had met earlier. He had interviewed me for Open Minds, and we spent a little time together in New York City, which is where I've lived most of my life. And he contacted me last year to say that he had decided that he wanted to take on a very ambitious project, which was write a play, not a screenplay, to make a movie based on, but a stage play. And I have a great love of theater. And not on Left at Eastgate or Rendlesham as much as the story behind Left at Eastgate, the story of Larry Warren and myself and our years-long struggle to bring this story to public attention.
If you needed some dramatic license, that story certainly got plenty in it.
I have loaned Ryan a great deal of original materials to do his best research from. I hope his best research. I have tremendous confidence in him, including many, many hours of taped conversations between Larry and I. And he has an opportunity to draw from the real things that happened and the way that they were said in creating the characters of Larry Warren and Peter Robbins. I was also very touched that he is weaving into the story a very important third character, namely my late sister Helen, who became a good friend of Larry's, was instrumental in encouraging us to do the work, and who helped out in so many ways over the years, unfortunately.
We've mentioned Helen before, but tell our audience.
Well, my sister Helen was a remarkable young woman in a lot of respects. She was a very accomplished writer and artist in her own right. She was a great poet who is probably best known for folks that know her under her performing name of Helen Wheels as an absolutely electrifying singer-songwriter who had quite a lot of success in the 70s and 80s in kind of the punk revolution and came up through CBGBs with all of the great performers we associate with that period, Patti Smith and the Ramones and the Talking Heads and so many other great groups and individual performers. And Helen wrote a number of hit songs for the great heavy metal group, the Blue Oyster Cult, but she was also had a degree in English literature, was a scholar in a number of respects, a specialist in the study of reptiles, a great chef, a really sweet, wonderful person, and the best sister anybody could have. And she and Larry became very good friends over the years that we worked together. And she was a very important character in our being able to take almost 10 years of our lives to focus in on writing the book that we did. And
well, do you think that this stage play will end up being presented in New York or London?
Well,
or
it certainly will be presented in New York, but maybe only, you know, in an off-Broadway realm. I know Ryan is talented. I know he is taking this project as seriously as anything that he has ever done in his life. I know that he spent all of last week out in Phoenix covering the International UFO Congress and doing interviews and making contacts. And I worked for years in theater management off-Broadway in New York, so we share a love of live theater. And although there have been more movies about UFOs than anyone can count, I'm only aware of a handful of attempts to bring the story to the live stage, and most of them not very successful. The most successful one is the play MJ-12 by a great playwright, Marty Martin, which was performed on a number of occasions in 2010, I believe.
We broadcast
the Roswell Festival.
That.
That's right. And you know what? As a broadcast, as a radio broadcast, it's up there with the greatest radio plays of all time. You don't need to see it to get it. So hats off to Marty, and I'm very confident Ryan is going to produce something important here, and I couldn't be prouder of him for taking the time and effort to take on such a serious and important project. And I must say I'm very flattered also and a little nervous because it's not my play. He can write whatever he wants. I have no say in it. I'm just acting as a consultant, as is Larry. And it's going to be kind of interesting at some point in the future to go and sit in on a reading, possibly even as early as this spring, and listen to an actor play the part of somebody named Peter Robbins.
That'll be interesting.
I guess.
Marty Martin, we have that play. It's still available on demand.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, on our website. And
well,
so they can go to the Roswell section, they'll see it.
I can only encourage listeners to do just that. It is as good as it gets. Marty did all the homework necessary. He knows the story and all the real people backwards and forwards. Of course, it is admittedly a work of nonfiction with a certain amount of fiction because there are things that happen that we can only guess at. And as a artist, as a playwright, I think he did a wonderful job of walking that line. And basically, MJ-12, the play, takes us back to the summer of 1947, and the action cuts back and forth and back and forth between Roswell, New Mexico, and the surrounding areas and the base, and Washington, D.C., and the White House and the Department of War. It would have been at the time. It was just before it became the Department of Defense, and everybody from, all of the local people that played a part in the story to Harry Truman and James Forrestal are characters in the play. And I have to stress here, you don't have to watch it to enjoy it. It is so well written, although it was great fun to see on the stage.
We put original music with it for the radio show and sound effects and dressed it up. It's an excellent show.
Yes, don't miss it. For anybody that hasn't heard that one, go out of your way, set aside some time, and enjoy the heck out of it. I know I did.
Now we were talking about stage plays, but there's an independent film, I think, under development.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, I will. I haven't been able to talk about it too much because I've been under a non-disclosure agreement, but it is an independent film in development called Apollo Minus Project, and I have been working as a consultant along with a very talented creative team and a wonderful producer for about 16 months now, and it is a project I take very seriously. The bare bones of it is that it opens with the Apollo 11 shot, the very famous shot to the moon, and many of us have felt that it's naive to think that even though NASA is a civilian agency, United States government, so to say, and that all of the space shots have been with, you know, astronauts going out there in peace into the universe, it seems naive to think that there have never been any missions that weren't classified or military in their nature or intelligence related. And so it is a very skillful weaving of what we feel is fact and fiction around the darker side of the UFO cover-up. And the play opens with the Apollo mission returning and a secret mission being launched. The astronauts involved in that go to the dark side of the moon where they encounter you-know-what. And when they return, the men who were involved in the mission are never the same. And the character that we're focused in on, a really sterling Neil Armstrong kind of character, immediately upon returning becomes very reclusive and several months later disappears and is never seen or heard from again. Now, we jump ahead now 40 years. His grandson, a character named Daniel, is a bright, rising young documentary filmmaker, increasingly obsessed with what happened to his grandfather. And the story of the film is that we open learning that Daniel has now disappeared in somewhere in Nevada, and it does not look good. And the film you're about to see is from all of the footage of the interviews and the information he's put together that his colleagues have put together.
And when will this be out? Do you have any idea?
Well, I'm guessing next year. We're working very hard on bringing everything together right now in a number of aspects, and this has really been is a process of education for me. I've consulted in small ways on films and lots of documentaries and television shows, but I've never been a consultant ongoing straight through a process. Already, we've been working together for more than a year, and I don't think that filming will be done ultimately until this autumn. So I am hopeful that we will see this in theaters next year. And for any of your listeners that want to get a bit more of an idea of this film, simply go to apollo-project.com to the film's website, where there is, I think, a very intriguing trailer and some information on the film. And I will be talking more about it with anybody that is going to listen as the year goes on and as I'm cleared to say more about the film and what we're bringing to it. I will also say, and I can say this now, that the screenwriter, a great and talented guy named Nick Ronan, came up with an idea that I thought was absolutely brilliant, namely that so many UFO-related films, when they come to the subject of ufologists, they very understandably create characters based on people like our friend Stanton Friedman or the late Bud Hopkins or Dr. John Mack or what have you. Nick's idea was to approach actual leading figures in the work and get them to play brief cameos of playing themselves in the film. And I thought that was extremely engaging. And again, because this is a very skillful mixture of truth and fiction, of being set in a totally documentary style, that it's going to be all the more intriguing to see people like me and a number of very well-known colleagues. And I, you're going to have to get me back on the show in a couple of months for me to give you those names, but I'll say they're among the best known in the field, playing characters based on themselves, essentially playing themselves in brief segments in the film. I think it's a wonderful idea, and I've read the script, so I know what I'm talking about here. Our producer Lisa Kwok, is doing a brilliant job of bringing it all together with, again, a very terrific creative team working with Nick and Lisa, and I'm very proud to be a part of the project.
We had a couple of emails while you were talking about somebody else playing playing you in the play. That both of those emails said Peter ought to play himself. He's a very talented guy.
Well, thank you. And the fact is, not a lot of people in ufology know this, but I've studied and audited acting classes for 25 years, not because I feel I want to be an actor, but because of all the things I've ever done, working in live theater with actors is about as exciting and rewarding a thing as I've ever done. And in the process of doing it, I made a very dear friend who continues to be a dear friend, and for my money, he's the finest stage director and acting coach working in America today, and his name is John Strasberg. And he spends part of the year teaching abroad and directing abroad, but part of it in New York. And when he is in the city working, I always sit in on his classes when I can. John's father is far and away the best-known acting coach in American history, the great Lee Strasberg, who mentored everybody from Marilyn Monroe to Elizabeth Taylor to Paul Newman to Eli Wallach and on down the great pantheon of 20th century American film actors, Al Pacino. In fact, it was Al's influence that got Lee the opportunity to play the great gangster Hyman Roth in Godfather II. I'm not up for, I don't know if I could play myself on stage. That's just too weird. But I'm happy to be a small part of somebody else doing the job, but whoever sent that in, thank you very much. I'm honored.
Now, Peter, you're well known for Rendlesham, but you and I both have had, I guess, a second career involved in Roswell.
We sure have.
For years.
Yes.
In years. I understand some new things may be developing there.
Yes, I'm delighted to say that our dear friend and soul sister, the great Renee Roach, for me, the heart and soul of so many of the great Roswell summer events, is back at it and is behind a wonderful event that's going to be coming up this coming summer, Roswell Film Fest and Cosmicon, not to be confused with Comic-Con. And that is going to take place back in dear old Roswell, New Mexico, June 28th through 30th this summer. And I'm sure hoping that I'm going to be involved in some way. We're talking about it right now. And there is nobody in the world of UFO-related events that I would rather work with than Renee Roach. She is a force in nature, one of the dearest and most dedicated people I've ever met, and a dear friend of both you and me.
That's right. I second the motion.
Yeah. see is something else.
We are going to have to wrap this up. Time is getting us here.
Yeah.
I've got Colin Bennett coming up, and he's going to talk. He's going to talk about George Adamski.
Ah, yeah, he's the man.
Yeah, and so
he wrote the book.
Yeah, so that'll be coming up next. A lot of people, we started kind of on a lark doing some early 50s Southern California stuff.
Yeah,
and it's taken a life of its own, you know.
Well, I must say, I think Colin's a great writer. He's a great investigator, and his book on Adamski is it really impressed me. And like a lot of American researchers, I'm not sure what to think of the reality behind Mr. Adamski's claims, but I am impressed by Colin's wonderful work to bring that story to a wider public and the terrific amount of research that he did. And I have some idea the amount of work that goes into that. So please say hi for me. I think he's going to be a great guest.
We have a couple of minutes, all we have. You got anything else you want to bring up?
Well, just to say that the story keeps going on. I have a feeling right now that for a number of reasons, we are in a time where things really are beginning to change on a deeper level than they have in all the years this has been going on. I can't prove it. I can't give you statistics and facts. And I honestly feel that what's behind it is not additional revelations or extra proof, but that more and more people are beginning to change on a much more profound level in their own lives than we've seen before, and as such be more open to looking at this material without the concern of the fear of ridicule that has done so much damage for so many decades now and has become kind of a specialty area of research for me. I'm just fascinated by how it came to be that if I said in any other context, hey, Jerry, my next-door neighbor, guess what? Yesterday afternoon and last night, I was out in the yard, and I looked up, and I saw this thing in the sky, and either I couldn't recognize it, I never saw anything like it before, or it did something that a plane or a helicopter couldn't do. I mean, if in another dimension, you would just say, gee, isn't that interesting, Peter? I wonder what it was. As opposed to the way that we in the Western world have been conditioned to think about the subject of, gee, what's wrong with Peter? I thought he was a pretty sane, straight-up guy. Has he gone a little mental on me? Has he become mystical? Has he become a hoaxer? Does he want to write a best-selling book? Anything except, gee, I wonder what Peter saw, and why is it, how is it that the subject of UFOs got tarred and feathered with such a loopy reputation? And
that's going to be a subject of a new show we'll have to do one of these days.
Well, I'll tell you what, I just finished a major paper on it that I haven't presented yet, and I'll come back whenever you like, and we'll pick up where we leave off here with just that topic.
Okay, Peter Robbins, our time is up. Thanks for being on.
A pleasure, really, Jerry.
Appreciate you listening. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Cheers.